If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And it really is about relationships. I mean, Keiko and I, early on, before our fund was even finished and the docs were registered, I mean, we took a bunch of meetings from the West Coast to the East Coast and meeting with partners. And sometimes it was embarrassing. And sometimes I could tell they were just humoring us, you know, like, hey, you know, go get them, guys. Wish you luck. But sorry, we can't give you money, you know. And then some would just straight up kind of like laugh and feel insulted that we even tried to approach them, you know. So
welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Corey Nemoto is the co-owner and founder of Keiko Capital. He began his real estate investing career in 2011 while finishing up his bachelor's degree at California Baptist University. He's been involved in multiple investment deals ranging from relocation, renovation, and new home development projects. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Sam. Appreciate it.
This is great. I like your bio, but it doesn't really give the full picture of what it is. You know, we're talking about some things offline and I'm like, okay, well, that's your bio, but that didn't really tell me much because all of a sudden you started talking and I go, wait, this dude's involved in all sorts of other things. So if you can, just like I ask everybody who comes on the show, give our listeners a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Yeah, sure. I know I do need to update that a little bit, but I don't want to, there's so much to, that I've been through in my career that to fit in like a, you know, one paragraph, but.
I'm just giving you grief, man. I think it's great. I think it's great. And I meant that as a compliment.
Oh no, absolutely, man. And thank you for that. And I mean, it's been quite the journey, to be honest. I started the short story is I started out wholesaling. Actually, I started out door knocking, for a couple of investors for a year out in Riverside, California, as I was finishing my degree. So I started from the very bottom. I knew nothing about real estate, didn't even know what a mortgage was. And I ended up getting into real estate. I met some mentors and I started out wholesaling of single family homes. So I wholesaled my first three deals. And as I was wholesaling it, I asked the investor, who's now a friend and partner and mentor to this day to me, I asked him if I could help ride the project, you know, to see how he renovates it and the whole process. So I learned so much just on the first three deals that I wholesaled to him. And from there, got into fix and flip and then ground up development of single family homes, small developments. And since then, my business partner and I have decided, or we, about 2.5 years ago, we decided to vertically integrate our company. And that's in more in the Seattle, Washington market, and where we now own the real estate brokerage, the property management company, construction company, and our real estate investment fund.
Those are a lot of different, while they're obviously all in the same industry, there are a lot of different moving pieces to each of those segments. How did you educate yourself on those different pieces, such as the brokerage, how to grow that brokerage? I mean, that for a lot of people is a single career in and of itself.
Yeah.
So how did you figure out how to grow each of those? I mean, you're a great guy, but you can't be the expert in all of it. So walk us through that process, because I think you've got a lot of nuggets there to share that we all want to learn from.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of learning lessons for sure. A lot of things we would probably do over if we could. And I mean, I'm not here to pretend like I know more than I do, because I'm not an expert in real estate sales. I don't sit open houses. I don't take clients around. I don't sell properties. I don't manage the property. I don't swing the hammer. So that's a great question. Like, how do we do it? And honestly, really, we're still learning. And one of the biggest learning lessons through that process was, and you know, I think it's perfect for your show to talk about, is when we decided to vertically integrate and try to scale. If I could do it over again, we would have done it a lot slower, because it is a lot to manage. It is a lot to learn. It's totally different industries, even though it's kind of tied into real estate all in itself. But you can't, you know, it'll probably take decades of, you know, of each kind of specialty to kind of master, right? And so we're still learning, and we're trying the best we can. But the biggest learning lesson was to make sure that we have infrastructure, the proper infrastructure set up for each entity and each industry to make sure that we can handle the not just managing the people, but the business itself. So for me, I manage all of our projects here in Hawaii. My business partner, Kikua, manages all the projects in Seattle, Washington, and in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I manage also the real estate investment fund, our fund, Keiko Capital. So we act as kind of a hybrid of private capital and institutional capital, where we lend money to other investors to acquire, reposition, and either refinance or sell their properties. So we act kind of like a hard money fund. We are primarily in the single family space. We're hard money, and we do a lot of the primary financing. And then Kikoa manages all the other entities, which is the real estate brokerage, construction company, and property management company. So
what was it like building out, and what was the impetus for building out each of those arms? I mean, did you guys have just enough property that you're like, you know, it became a worthwhile endeavor to build your own property management company to handle your own stuff? Did you build it so that you could then just grow your business by managing others? Like what did each of those look like?
Well, so a lot of it is we were fortunate enough to build the right relationships where we could partner. So we actually have co-ownership. Kikua and I have co-ownership in the real estate brokerage. We have a managing broker. His name's Greg. And he's pretty much the principal. He handles everything. And we help build out the teams. Kikua is in the day-to-day. A lot of his time is in the real estate brokerage in helping to manage a lot of the agents and also bring in business for the company. So a lot of it wasn't hard, to be honest, to start the companies with the right strategic partnerships. But managing it and getting them off the ground is another story, right? And that's where all the learning lessons came, because it's one thing to start a new company. You know, like, as you know, like 9 out of 10 businesses fail within the first 3 to 5 years. That's a fact. And until the company is mature and can sustain itself, it's a grind for every single company. So if, you know, people think we're crazy sometimes to just jump face first into this. And my answer to that is, yeah, we kind of are. And, like, if you weren't crazy going into it, like you kind of become a little crazy going through it, you know? So it's been quite the journey.
Yeah. So let's talk your brokerage. That's interesting in that you hired, it sounded like one of the keys there was to hire a, you know, somebody that has experience in that industry. You know, sound like you're the key principal there. I don't forget what you said his name was, but you know, he runs the day to day, and then your other business partner is involved quite heavily with that. That's interesting. So what, I guess, why did you guys partner up on that necessarily? I guess, yeah, just talk to us about, unless if I can formulate even a thorough question here. You guys all bring different skills to the table, and it sounds like each of you is running your own independent part of the business. So why did you guys team up? But let's start there.
Me and my business partner, Kikua. Mm-hmm. We teamed up, I mean, because we were friends, first of all. And he had a property, like, literally, like right across the street from mine. And he lives in the Seattle, Washington area. So he lives in Issaquah. So he was asking me if I can help manage his project while I was going through mine. And, you know, he would cut me in like 50-50. And I told him, oh, you know, dude, you don't have to give me 50%. Like, I literally right across the street. If you just want me to check on the guys and make sure they're out there working, like, that's no problem. I'll do that for free, you know? And we just had the same kind of mindset and of, like, you know, putting people first and relationships first. And so we had a kind of the same vision too, although he's a lot more aggressive and big picture dreamer, you know? I'm kind of more conservative and number cruncher. And you know, he's the more design guy. So we thought it was a, you know, a great balance. And, you know, it's been a great partnership so far. there's a lot going on so that we have to communicate to each other. So sometimes there's so much new information that we have to, there has to come a lot of trust involved where there comes a point where I don't have to update him on every single thing that's going on in the, you know, the sections that I'm managing. Right. And same thing for him, because that's kind of impossible. But for all the high level stuff, we definitely have to make those decisions together. But that's kind of how it all started, was we were flipping houses kind of right across the street from each other. And then we realized, like, we work out together. We, you know, like, he's, when he flies in, like, we had lunch and dinner and stuff. So we're like, why don't we just team up and do this, you know? And since then it's been nonstop.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. Then you guys built out a construction company, you said, right?
Correct. In Washington.
In Washington. So you built a construction company in Washington. Who runs that for you?
Okay. Cole manages that too, but he has general contractors and a lot of a team that's out there kind of managing the projects. Before that company was kind of formed just to, for our projects. But then as we started to build out the brokerage and the property management company, it's become a company that is great to come in when needed. And when we have, when we need to trust, you know, our team, or, you know, trust a good crew, something that is hard to find, right? Especially in the renovation space, because it's not, I mean, just because it's like a builder has been building for decades, it doesn't mean he can renovate a house properly the way we need it to be, where you watch the budget and you also watch the quality, right? You're doing QC and budget control all the time. That's not easy to do.
Right. Let's talk about your, about the property management company. So I know we started on this earlier, but you went to build that. So now you've got a brokerage, you've got a construction company. Now you got a property management company. Did you guys build that just to manage what you guys own?
Yeah. Well, actually not really. We decided to vertically integrate because we knew we weren't going to be flipping houses forever. And, you know, we wanted to cultivate something that we could work more on the business eventually instead of inside the business. And so we decided to vertically integrate. It was actually an idea I got from a friend of mine who I went to school with, and he's in the cannabis industry and he's in Las Vegas. He's become the largest producer of cannabis for Vegas. And he's mentored by some of the big builders out in Las Vegas. And his mentor was always teaching him, like, you know, here's the next step, you know, do a SWOT analysis, do, you know, you always got to look at how do you cultivate your business to, so that you can package it and somebody may want to acquire you one day. And so he vertically integrated his company. So he owns the cultivation company, the trucking company, the packaging company. And I asked him, why did he do that? And he said, well, one day Big Pharma is going to come into the space. They're already in the space. They're kind of dipping their toe in. But he said, as soon as it's, you know, legalized federally, Big Pharma is going to come in and they're going to wipe everybody out pretty much. And he said, but, you know, for him, he's looking to potentially sell it to them if, you know, on a silver platter. And so he had that as his exit strategy. And who knows, he may not never have to do that because he's making great cash flow from the business. But that got us thinking, like, okay, we got to start thinking about this more about a business and how do we control the process. And so he vertically integrated to work on controlling the process and also kind of make profiting from every stage, lowering his costs and profiting from every stage.
How many units did it make sense to build a management company around when you guys did that?
To be honest, we were fortunate because we had a friend who had a property management company. He sold it and he is a go-giver like ourselves. And he's just a friend. He said, you know what, guys, like, here's the whole software I use. Here's the VA team that I use, like, have at it, you know. And it basically was on a thumb drive, and we couldn't thank that guy enough. And he kind of helped mentor us and guide us along there. And it wasn't that hard. So our costs were very minimal. And so that business is actually, it's very cash heavy because it has to manage a lot of the deposits and, you know, do the rent, have control of the rent schedules. So really we have one main property manager who we cut in as a partner as well. So he helps to manage the entire business. And so our expenses were very low because he was vested into the success of the company. So as we profit, he profits as we build out and grow. So that company was actually, to be honest, like the easiest one to get off the ground that was less painful for the pocket coming out of pocket. But
right. That's interesting. When it comes to hard money lending, I know you guys said you're mostly in the residential space on that. Did you guys build a fund that you bring in other people's funds to lend out? Are you lending just your own capital, or what's that look like?
That's a great question. So, because the financing side, as I've learned over the last 2.5 years, is it's definitely a different space, even though it's necessary for acquiring real estate. But our fund is designed to take in investor capital. We can only take in accredited investors who want to invest. But we've decided to not go that route. Instead, we decided to work with large institutions. So large institutions who back us, they'll either fund us at the table or they'll give us lines of credit. So we'll have a line that we can pull on to close a loan. And then they'll either sweep the line, so they'll buy the notes when we're done, or we can go and sell it to another party, a secondary market buyer in this space.
Right. So they sweep the line. So maybe the bank buys back the own notes from you guys, right? What's the size of those lines of credit that you have to have in order to even make a hard money lending program like this work?
Well, if it's a line for us, I believe like for starting out, the lowest line is about 10 million. There's some institutions that will give like a line for like 3 million, but usually starting out, it's about 10 and then it scales up from there. And it really is about relationships. I mean, Keiko and I, early on, before our fund was even finished and the docs were registered, I mean, we took a bunch of meetings from the West Coast to the East Coast and meeting with partners. And sometimes it was embarrassing. And sometimes I could tell they were just humoring us, you know, like, hey, you know, go get them, guys. Wish you luck. But sorry, we can't give you money, you know. And then some would just straight up kind of like laugh and feel insulted that we even tried to approach them, you know. So it was hard, but we knocked a lot of doors. We went to a lot of conferences, built a lot of relationships, and somebody, you know, there's a team that gave us a shot, and then we got to prove to them what we're worth, and we're working with them to this day.
Yeah, I bet the first person that came and said, yeah, sure, we'll partner with you on that, I bet that was a pretty exciting day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because at first I didn't realize that a lot of the institutional capital, from a lot of it comes from Wall Street. I didn't realize how much they were in the space. So I thought, you know, we would have to bring in our own capital, which was the plan anyways. But I decided, like, you know, I need to learn the front end of the business, which is originating the loans, knowing the process from, you know, underwriting to close, and then working on kind of just managing that side. And I didn't want to have to manage a bunch of investors who are coming into the fund and investing a lot of money and managing, servicing the investors as well. So figure we learn from one side, and it's actually been very successful to a point where we may not even take in a dollar into our fund. Actually, we might just do this by working with large institutions and lines of credit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you have those sorts of lines at your disposal, it makes it a much easier transaction, I would assume. How did you educate yourself on what the banks or what your secondary market buyers will buy?
When we get a loan that comes in, like say it's a standard fix and flip loan out here in Hawaii, where the average loan size might be around $500,000 to $700,000, including the acquisition and renovation budgets. So as we're underwriting and processing that loan, we're doing it parallel with our partners and their team. Because ultimately, we're not going to hold the loan. We're not going to hold the note. In fact, even our capital partners are not going to hold the note. It all gets sold and resold and then securitized and then sold back on Wall Street. So all of us kind of have guidelines to follow. And that's why we can't lend over a certain LTV unless our capital partners are okay with that. And sometimes they are. And sometimes we do have private capital that, if it's a unique deal that we really like, we may be able to just come in with private capital.
That's really interesting. Are you guys selling these notes? Maybe that's the wrong question. So if we have to edit all this out, tell me, But are you selling these notes for more than face value?
I'll put it to you like this. So let's say we do a loan. We're getting the money at maybe 8.5% and 1 point. But we do the loan at 9.5% or 10% and 2.5 points. So we might make 1.5 points on the front end and then also get what we call the yield spread premium, which is our spread between the interest. So we also get residual income for the life of that loan. So if we're getting at 8.5% and we sell it and we do the loan at 9.5%, we'll make 1% of the loan paid monthly.
Right, right. That's interesting. So you guys can take this stuff off your balance sheet almost right away and then just go back out and keep doing it.
That's right.
Have you had any that you couldn't move?
We had one that we couldn't move. That was a private loan that we did. And it was one of the first loans. It was such a great deal that our capital partners actually didn't want to do it because they thought that it exposed them to risk and liability for doing that loan. Even though the seller, I think the need that we bring to the marketplace is our motto is we're investors, funding for investors by investors, because we're investors ourselves. So we understand that when a seller is motivated and needs to sell, which this seller did need to sell, the dollar amount sometimes doesn't matter to them. They just need enough to, this guy needed enough to move from Hawaii to Florida. And that's all he wanted. Like, he didn't want anything more. He wanted the headaches gone. So, but some of our capital partners who are, kind of bankers, they see it as risk, So they decided to, pull out, they said, sorry, we're not comfortable doing this. So we decided to close that loan and we held it and we were going to sell it, but nobody wanted to buy it because the LTV was so low. That's why it was a learning lesson for us. Cause I was like, okay, so sometimes it could be too good of a deal where nobody wants to take the loan, So
yeah. LTV too low. That's not one you hear every day.
Exactly. That's what I thought, and to me it's like, how come no one wants to buy this? And it's so low that it kind of brought up a red flag, So we ended up holding that loan until our client decided to do a cash out refi, and he cashed out a lot. It was, quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. What are some things that you would do differently? I know you said that you would, have maybe been a little bit more deliberate and scaled more slowly. But what are some other things you would have done in this, what appears to be a pretty rapid, growth?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because there's a lot of information out there. And I think for every person, it's different. It's like, what can you handle capacity wise? Like, what do you have the stamina for? Because, there's a lot of talk about 10Xing your business and stuff. And I think that's great for the right people. But some people, it could be dangerous, to take on that mentality. And I think the realistic idea of that is, I rather somebody shoot and try to 10X and fail than not shoot at all. I think just staying on the sideline stagnant is worse than scaling and failing, but for us, I rather, what I've learned for me is, my capacity is large. I have a lot of stamina to take on. I love this and it fulfills me. But at the same time, I know I overextended our limit, because so if I could do it over again, I would have set up a little bit more infrastructure to handle scale. And when I say infrastructure, I mean everything from back-end CRM systems and your entire process. Like, what happens when a loan hits your table all the way to closing, and then after closing, what's after that? Like, having all the right team, the right software, the right tools and resources to handle growth. And there is a hard balance between that, because sometimes you don't want to move too slow either, right? You need to ride some momentum sometimes in business, but there is a difference from being negligent and a little reckless when you're trying to scale your business. And yeah, I've seen multiple times investors and developers implode just because they've grown too fast.
Right.
especially when you're working with debt.
Right. Yeah, I've certainly certainly had a front row seat, not to the implosion, but to the stresses that go along with success. And there was a podcast guest I had on, gosh, sometime mid-December, and he said the same thing. He said you got to be afraid of growth just as much as failure, because explosive growth brings all its own set of troubles. So yeah, just being prepared for that's awesome. Corey, let's jump here into the final four if we can. I wish we had more time because this is good. I feel like we're just getting started, man. I've got like 50,000 more questions for you, but let's jump here into the final four if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
One piece of advice that I think is important, which is hard sometimes for a new investor to understand, is find out what value you have to offer and really do some digging in that. And then go out there and give it to someone. Find the right person to give that to. Because honestly, I had no experience in finance. My degree was in exercise science and marketing. You know what I mean? And then I got into real estate. And then, now I'm in cutting mortgages, when 10 years ago, I didn't know what a mortgage was. And when I look back, and how I started, because I had nothing, I had no money, no resources, and no one really in real estate that I could lean on, like in my family or friends. But what I knew was that I would do anything to learn. And so all I had was sweat equity at the time. So I door knocked for a year, and it was in 2011 and 2012 when, the market was still recovering and nobody wanted you knocking on their door. So I have so many stories about that. But I realized that what I had to offer was the hustle, and people can count on me. Like I'll get it done. So I found the right people who needed guys like me, to find them deals or go knock on the doors, and I would go do it. I'll put my head down, get it done. And then from there, I learned more. I asked, the investors who I was wholesaling to, if I could learn from them and work with them, gave them value in that sense, where I would help them demo and trash the house. And so like from there, I learned that you really need to know what you have to offer, and everybody has something to offer. Maybe if you have money in the bank and you want to pay to play, great. That's your value, but if you don't have any money or any resources, you still have something to offer, and that's the hustle. And that's what I did. So sometimes I would say that new investors may not, they'll have that go right over their head because it's not tangible. And I understand that. It's not, okay, go to this website, pull this list, get this marketing source and mail it. It's not tangible information like that. But I honestly, it really is about relationships and finding the right people to work with that fit your moral compass in business, and give them all you can, all you have to offer. And the doors will open and magic will happen. No doubt.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's all very good stuff. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Well, I've been working on waking up earlier because before I used to be I'd work until like 2 a.m. and stuff. And when I say work, like sometimes it's I'll be YouTube playing in the background while I'm trying to get something done. It's not efficient. Maybe for a little while I'd lie to myself that it was, but really it's just, I was always a night owl, but more recently now, especially I take the little one to school, like I've been getting up earlier, starting my day a little earlier. And I think I really do feel that, a strong morning routine will help kick off the day for anybody. I haven't mastered it yet, to be honest, but it's definitely a lot better than like a year and a half ago.
Right. Good for you. No, that's great. That's great. Good for you. Yeah. You were staying up working, I'd gotten up for the day. Of course, we're on different time zones, but I'd gotten up for the day while you were still calling it a late night. So that's impressive. But yeah, there's something to the morning you can't recreate elsewhere. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you are doing to make the world a better place?
Well, right now, it's also part of my why, which is it fits right into what we do. And I donate a lot of my time to help other investors to learn the space. Some of them, like they'll come to me after paying like $50,000 or something to go to one of the training courses that come through. And then they're still stuck left not knowing what to do, because there's a lot of fat in this business where like, if I had somebody early on that could help me cut through the fat, which I did, I had mentors, and so I give a lot of my time. Now my time is a lot about building and cultivating relationships. Maybe it's with potential private investors that want to invest with us. Maybe it's with an up-and-coming investor who wants to start doing deals. I see that they have the energy, the hustle, and the ambition, and the entrepreneur mindset that, you know, I'll help them. I'll give them all the tools that we use to underwrite deals and close deals. And in that sense, I've seen a lot of investors start to do deals, and now we're doing loans for them. They're big clients of ours, and I've seen how it's changed them. And it fulfills me in every way possible, because some of them feel stuck when they're just starting out. You know, so much to learn.
Right. Yeah. There is a lifetime, many lifetimes worth of information to digest just in this space. So good for you for helping people get that and bridging.
We also support the Mercy Housing Project. That's like actually our kind of like donation side.
No, that's cool. I think both of those are incredibly valuable. I mean, let's not discount what it is you do, because man, there's nothing worse than having a great idea but not having any idea or the experience to know how to implement it. So having people on your team that can help you do that's right. Invaluable. Corey, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Best way is actually social media. Like I like Instagram and Facebook because I can just post updates, and it's kind of like a mix between my personal, you know, life and my business life, which is great because after a while, like our main website for our main company is actually still says coming soon. It's been saying coming soon for 2.5 years. So it's probably not coming, but our fund and our other entities, we do have a website because we do need a presence and stuff. But honestly, for us, I rather build relationships directly. So on social media, both my handles are Corey, Corey.Nemoto, and that on Instagram and Facebook, that's probably the best way.
Right. And how do you spell Nemoto?
That's Nemoto.
Awesome. Corey.Nemoto. Man, that's awesome. Corey, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it. This was great.
Thank you, Sam. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.